All right, welcome back everyone to the deep dive. We're diving into a case today.
Oh, this should be interesting.
Yeah, and it's it deals with student free speech, and
A hot topic.
it is a hot topic, Semechnick v. Indian Prairie School District.
Well, I've heard of this one.
Yeah, and it really kind of gets to the heart of, how much can schools restrict what students say and what they express, even if it's not like disruptive, like where's that line? Like
Right.
if, and I'm sure like a lot of our listeners have been in school, whether it's high school, college, and you think about like what you could or couldn't say or express. And this case really gets at that, that tension between like your right to free speech and the school's authority to kind of,
Keep things in order.
right, keep things in order.
Yeah.
It's a delicate balance for sure. On the one hand, students don't shed their First Amendment rights at the schoolhouse gate, right?
But on the other, schools have a legitimate interest in making sure the learning environment is safe and productive for everyone. And it's these, cases like this that really help us figure out where that boundary lies. So Zemeckis is a great example. We're dealing with a student who wore a Be Happy Not Gay t-shirt, and this was in response to a school-sanctioned day of silence.
What's the day of silence, just for folks who maybe aren't familiar?
Sure, yeah. It's a day where students basically take a vow of silence to protest the harassment and discrimination that LGBTQ plus students face.
Gotcha. Okay.
So you can see how a shirt like that in that context could be pretty provocative.
Yeah, I can see where the school might have some concerns there. So, what happened exactly? Like, walk us through the events that led to this lawsuit.
So we got to go back to April 2006. Our student, Heidi Zemechnick, she wears this Be Happy Not Gay t-shirt on a day of truth. This day of truth was, kind of her counter protest. The school, gets some complaints, deem the shirt offensive, and ask her to change it. Now she does. She crosses out not gay with her mom's consent, and there's no like official disciplinary action taken. But then, fast forward to April 2007, Zemechnick and another student, Alexander Nuxall, they plan to wear the same shirts again for that year's Day of Truth.
Crow?
And this time, the school's like, nope, not happening. They tell them up front the shirts aren't allowed. That's when Zemechnick and Nuxall, they decide, all right, we're taking this to court. They claim the school's violating their First Amendment rights. Their initial attempt to get a preliminary injunction, which would let them wear the shirts while the case played out, that gets denied by the district court, but then it goes up to the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, and that's where things get really interesting.
So the Seventh Circuit, now they're the ones who really dug into the legal nitty-gritty here. When they looked at this case, what legal framework did they use to analyze it?
Oh, they went straight to the big one for student speech. Tinker v. Des Moines.
Right, that's the landmark case, right?
Absolutely. Back in 69, the Supreme Court ruled that students don't just abandon their First Amendment rights at school. But, and this is crucial, Tinker also said that schools can limit student speech if they can show it's likely to cause a substantial disruption to the school environment or, infringes on the rights of others. So the Seventh Circuit in Zemechnick, they're like, yep, Tinker applies here. But they put a big emphasis on the school needing hard evidence, not just speculation, to back up their claims of potential disruption.
So the school couldn't just say, oh, the shirt's going to cause problems. They had to actually prove it. What kind of evidence did Indian Prairie School District bring to the table?
Well, they pointed to a couple things. They talked about past incidents of harassment against LGBTQ plus students at the school. They also had an expert testify, and this expert called the Be Happy Not Gay slogan, insidious. Their argument was that basically, this message, especially during the day of silence, would make LGBTQ plus students feel unsafe, creating a hostile environment, and that was a substantial disruption.
Okay, but it doesn't sound like the Seventh Circuit bought that. What was it about the school's evidence that didn't convince them?
Yeah, Judge Posner, who wrote the opinion for the court, he was pretty skeptical of the evidence. He said the past harassment incidents were either too vague, too far back in time, or just not connected enough to Zemechnick or the shirt itself. And as for the expert calling the slogan insidious, the court basically said, well, that's just like an opinion. There wasn't any clear methodology behind it, no data, no direct link to any likely disruption. So the court was basically like, look, without more concrete proof, we're not going to accept that this t-shirt is going to cause serious problems.
So the school really had to show that the shirt would actually disrupt the learning environment, not just that it might make some people uncomfortable.
Right. And there's another important legal concept that comes into play here, the heckler's veto.
Heckler's veto.
Yeah, the court made it clear that a school can't shut down a student's speech just because others might react negatively, even disruptively. Their job is to manage those reactions, not silence the student. They can't punish Zamechnik and Nuxall because their message might upset some people. If we let the heckler's veto rule, then anyone could shut down speech they don't like just by making a scene.
Right, that makes sense. Free speech would be pretty meaningless if that were the case. Now, the court also used a pretty interesting phrase to describe the slogan, tepidly negative. Why was that significant?
It might sound kind of casual, but that phrase actually does a lot of legal heavy lifting. Calling it tepidly negative means the court saw it as protected speech, not something that falls into those categories the First Amendment doesn't protect. It wasn't a direct threat. It wasn't hate speech. It wasn't what the law calls fighting words, you know, something that would like immediately cause a fight. So since it was protected speech, the school needed a much stronger reason under Tinker to restrict it. And as we talked about, they just didn't have that.
So tepidly negative means that while the message might offend some, it's still protected by the First Amendment, and the school needs a really good reason to ban it.
Exactly. The court drew a clear line between speech that's offensive and speech that actually disrupts the school. Judge Posner even wrote that a school that permits advocacy for LGBTQ plus rights can't stifle criticism of homosexuality. You know, really emphasizing that viewpoint neutrality.
Right, that the school can't pick and choose which side of an issue students can express.
Exactly. They saw the school's actions as clear viewpoint discrimination. They allowed speech supporting LGBTQ plus rights with the day of silence, but tried to block speech with a different perspective, even if they thought it was only tepidly negative. And that's a big no-no under the First Amendment.
So it sounds like the students scored a pretty solid win for free speech here. What was the final outcome in Zamechnik?
The Seventh Circuit sided with the students. They said, yep, the school violated their First Amendment rights, so they awarded them nominal damages. It was like $1 each at first, later bumped up to $25.
Nominal damages? Why such a small amount?
Well, nominal damages are what courts award when your rights are violated. But you didn't suffer like a huge measurable financial loss because of it.
Okay.
In this case, they won on principle, but they couldn't really prove they were financially harmed. But, you know, it's still a symbolic victory. The court's saying you were wronged. And then there's the permanent injunction they issued.
What did that do?
That's the big one. It basically banned Indian Prairie School District from stopping students from wearing stuff that says, be happy, not gay, in the future. It sets a precedent in that area that this specific message is protected student speech.
So the key takeaway for schools is that they really have to tread carefully when trying to limit student expression, especially when it comes to touchy social issues. They need solid proof of a likely disruption, and they absolutely can't discriminate against certain viewpoints just because they don't like them or think they might upset some people.
Yeah,
couldn't have put it better myself. Zamechnik reinforces Tinker, but makes it crystal clear that schools need evidence, not just vague worries or opinions without any real backing. That tepidly negative label was key in saying this speech was protected and shutting down the heckler's veto. A huge reminder that schools need to manage reactions, not silent students, because of how others might respond. So yeah, nominal damages, a permanent injunction, it all sends a strong message about protecting student speech, even when it's unpopular or controversial.
It really makes you think, doesn't it? Like, what does true viewpoint neutrality look like in schools today? How do we protect free speech while fostering a respectful environment for everyone? It's a complex issue, and I think this case really highlights the challenges schools face in trying to find that balance. Thanks for breaking it all down.
Anytime. This is a good one.
Yeah, really fascinating stuff. And for our listeners, you know, think about this case. Think about the implications. What do you think? Where do you think that line should be drawn?
Keep those brains working.
That's all the time we have for today. We'll catch you next time on The Deep Dive.